This week on Chew the Fat, we are speaking with two young-ish men who have a very, very big interest in food, travel, and the internet.
And Eurovision.
Oh, and Eurovision.
Yes, this episode, the last in the current series, is us talking to ourselves. So we discuss our beginnings before blogging, our respective careers that we trained in, and a few other little quirks about us that you might not know.
This is the last episode of this series of Chew the Fat, so we thought we'd do something a little bit different for episode 12 of series 1, so we hope you enjoy. So some might say that this is a tad self-indulgent, and yeah, it kind of is.
I think if you have your own podcast, you have to have at least one episode of just yourselves.
I guess so. But
if you own it,
yeah,
I mean,
own it, work it.
Yeah.
What was weird is when we originally planned Chew the Fat back many, many, many moons ago, we actually originally planned to do just 6 episodes. And we couldn't get over the response that we got from you guys. And thank you so, so much for the amazing response we've gotten over the last couple of weeks. But we just said, okay, we'll do double. We'll bring it to 12. And here we are on episode 12. And we always kind of thought, what will we do for the last one? What will be something different for the last one? And we said, well, we've interviewed loads of other people. And people are still oddly curious about the two of us, which I don't quite understand. And we put a poll out and put a few questions out on Instagram a while back. And the response for people wanting to hear more about us was quite a lot. So we kind of were given permission to be self-indulgent.
But I think that, you know, I really, really wanted the last episode to be just us, because I think, yes, our podcast, Chew the Fat, is all about the interviewees, and it's all about sharing their stories and hearing more about what they do. But at the end of the day, it's produced, presented, edited, blood, sweat, and teared by the two of us. So I think naturally there was always going to come a time that it would just be us two reflecting on
life,
what we've achieved and who we are. And so that's what we're going to do right now.
Are we? Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. So begin reflection now.
I think that's the dryer going. So this is a little bit weird, because we've always said with the whole podcast, and by the way, we say that this is the last episode. It's the last episode of series 1. We've already started recording series 2, which will be out in a couple of weeks, depending on when you're listening to this, sometime in October. And we're really excited for all that is to come with that. But this one, we're in our kitchen. We are adamant from day one that we'll always be in the place that someone feels most comfortable. And considering that we basically sleep in here and live in here, we might as well do the podcast from here. So it's quite nice. You may hear the postman, you may hear the dryer. The induction cooker might start beeping at some point, but we'll deal with that as we come to it.
As is life.
As is life.
So to begin this, who is Russell? Explain who you are, or where you came from, or what you're all about.
So, hi there, my name is Russell, no, my name is Russell Alford, and I am a food blogger, I guess, and food and travel writer, depending on who you're talking to, podcaster, and radio is my life, or at least it was for quite a long time. So I think my yearbook from Scarries Community College, where I went to secondary school, has dream job, and I had a Radio 1 breakfast show host, and I never, ever, ever, ever came remotely close to that.
I think you're telling a little bit of a lie.
Maybe. No. So, radio is my life. I say that now presently, which is weird, because I always said was my life. But anyway.
Is.
It is. Yeah, you maintain it is. I kind of still am a bit on defense about that.
To give a little bit of a backstory, I have pushed Russell to produce a podcast for at least 5 years. And it took a long time of trying to convince him that it's his skill and his expertise and he would be amazing at it.
Okay, thank you.
And he edits this perfectly every single week, so I always knew he had that inside him, but you kept it in a place in your head that was far, far away from the front, I think, for a long, long time.
Yeah. And I kind of wanted it that way. So to go way, way back, I actually discovered radio as I knew and love it through podcasts back way, way, way when they were a new thing. I think during like 2005, 2006. So I used to listen religiously to a lot of BBC Radio 1 podcasts, hence the dream job that eventually came around. And I just adored it. I just loved the fun and the communication. And even right now, I'm not even looking at Patrick, I'm looking at the microphone because I'm just, it's that way ingrained in me. And I always just loved radio. And when we got to London, or the whole kind of crux behind going to London when we moved back in 2013, the two of us were on a trip to Brussels, and I had done student radio for all of university. Me and one of my best friends ran the radio station. Hey, Seamus. And we had the most fun, and it was like, you know, kid in a candy store type of thing. We got to make our own radio station and do what we wanted with it, and it was fantastic. And then I went into doing things in digital radio, digital online. Who knows? Some people listen to it. You listen to it.
I did every single episode.
You used to listen and work. And I used to have a lot of fun. It was very, you know, chart-friendly music. Well, not really. It's a bit alternative. But anyway, it was good fun. And I really learned a lot from it. But I wanted more. And I wanted to scratch that itch. So we're sitting in the airport in Brussels. And we had had a lot of thinking about life and our relationship and everything. And I always remember what you said to me was, you went to the loo.
I did.
You came back from it. And you said, we're sitting at the gate to Dublin. And the two gates beside us say London. And we're having this huge conversation about, should we move to London? Because you will never be a radio presenter at Radio 1, or you'll never work at Radio 1 if you're in Dublin. And we both went, all right then, let's do it. So about 5 months later, we moved to London. And as if by coincidence, fate, who knows what, the day we moved to London, an application form for an internship that I applied for before came up. And I was like, oh my God, this is freaky. It's all coming into place. So yeah, straight away I applied for this internship. And lo and behold, 4 months later, what was it, the 14th of October, if I remember correctly? I started working at BBC Radio 1. And I remember walking around the office on my first day. And I'm meeting everyone and everything like that. And I have asthma. As you can probably hear, this is the thing I can't edit out. It's my wheezing over the past 12 weeks. Because it's like, I have a question to ask you. But when I was walking around the office, my asthma was really affecting me. A, because of London, because, you know, it's full of crap in the air. And two. And this is why I don't work in radio. And dot number B, I kept getting like, hi. I don't know what it was, nerves, my chest was tight, everything. I was just so happy that I couldn't breathe properly. And I'm walking around the office like, hi, I'm Russell. Nice to meet you. And I think everyone just thought, what is this freak doing here? And then our assistant, our manager, was walking around with us. She's like, Russell, can you not breathe? I was like, no, I can't. I'm just so happy.
I mean, out of thousands of applicants and rounds of group interviews and individual interviews, I mean, you made it to a workplace, to a company that you had always dreamed of. So, I mean, I think everyone could have probably expected those three interns to be incredibly nervous and incredibly excited at the same time. And if you scroll back, I think through our Facebook page for Gastrogaze right to the end, I think there's the photo that I took of you in Clapham Common the moment you were told that you got that job.
Yeah.
So if you want to stalk us, it's
there.
It is online somewhere.
To go back a bit though, That photo was from when I got told I got a job at the BBC, which annoyingly, I actually got two jobs at the BBC at one time. But oh, anyway, that's another
humble brag alert.
Humble brag alert, anyway. but that was from that, and I obviously had always dreamt BBC, amazing. And so it was the day I got told you got the job at the BBC, and I was just on the phone crying, and you just were like, and you took a photo, and you said, I have to get this photo because this is the happiest I will ever see you. And I think I've been happy since.
Yeah.
Have I?
Well, I would hope so.
Okay, good.
Because that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That was probably, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, 2013.
A bit more?
Yeah, probably a bit more. Yeah. Around, yeah. Let's say five-ish. No, let's not timestamp this podcast. Mm. It's like a epitaph or something like that. But I got told it was actually... I know this is going to sound really confusing, I'm very sorry. But it was my first day at the BBC in another job as a tour guide, which I was pretty good at, I have to say. And it was my lunch break, and I got the call from a lady called Nadine, who was in charge of recruitment and everything for Radio 1. And my reaction, she said, was akin to Rylan getting told that he got through. Yeah, she said, I just started crying and making noises, and I just was in disbelief. And she says, most people just say, oh my God, that's amazing, thank you. You went full on Rylan on X Factor, and I'll never forget you for that. So that was my history.
Wow.
And then basically I left radio.
Why? Why was that?
So I wanted to stay at Radio 1, but it just never felt right, even though I'd been there for like, it was a 3 months my internship. It feels like 2 or 3 months. It was one or the other.
It felt like six.
It was October to December, so it was mid-October to mid-December, so it was 8 weeks, I think. Let's call it 8 weeks. And when I'd done it, I got to say, well, I worked on the Radio 1 breakfast show for a couple of weeks, which I loved. It was amazing. I adored every second of that. I remember we got to work at the Radio 1 Teen Awards, which happens, I don't know, in Wembley. And I was working, doing all my stuff today, and Fall Out Boy, who I adored in my teenage years, kind of still adore a little bit, guilty pleasure, were on the main stage. And I was like, oh, I love Fall Out Boy. And my producer, a girl called Natasha, who I adored working with, she was the sweetest girl, she goes, take my AAA pass, your task for me this afternoon is you're going to go to the side of the stage and you're going to go and enjoy every second of Fall Out Boy. I was like, are you sure? She, it's an order. I was like, okay, fine, I'll do that. So there I was at the side of the stage watching one of my favorite teenage bands on stage, having the time of my life on my own in this huge pit. And then out walks Greg James, now Radio 1 breakfast show host. He's like, all right, mate, yeah. And he's just dancing around to Fall Out Boy as well. And he's like, I have to go on stage now. I was like, all right, bye. I have to kind of do some work. And then I go back up to the makeshift radio studio and in walk Fall Out Boy. And I'm just like, be cool. Be cool. I didn't ask for a photo or anything like that. I just was like, this is cool. Okay. Wow. So there's some really good highlights like that. I met some really cool people, made some really lifelong friends, and it was all quite crazy, but it just never felt right, and I think it was almost like plateau. That was it. Chris Evans has said when he resigned from Radio 2, he's a mountain climber, and he wants to climb other mountains.
I think or something. From the rush of excitement at the start of arriving in a new city and clinching a job or jobs actually in your dream workplace, your dream employer, I think that was always going to come crashing down when you get into the realm of contracts and being kept on and then progressing into proper jobs and specializing in areas that you want to, but maybe there aren't jobs available.
And now actually I just remember you said about finishing up and everything. I just remember that last day. Well, I blanked it out, but you brought it back to me. You're a horrible man.
This is what I'm here for.
So we were flying back here. Weren't we? For a family party. And we had a big presentation with the big boss at Radio 1. And I left it. I was like, thank you very much. And I went straight to the bathroom and I cried for about 20 minutes.
Oh, God.
And then I left the building just sobbing. I was so sad that day. I'm still sad thinking about it now, aren't I? Why did you bring this up?
Because it's an integral part of your story, and it's a part that people need to hear, because I think I've been so impressed with this entire season of the podcast.
Have you listened to it?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay, good.
I've taken part in it. And I think everybody who's listening, or everyone who I've had feedback from, has also been really, really impressed by the quality of the audio and the editing.
Except this episode's a bit echoey, but hey.
And I cannot take the responsibility or the claim over any of that, because it's not my skill set at all. So it just goes to show that, you know, you have the chops, and this is the experience that you came from.
Yeah, true. I'd like to do it again. I think this has given me a bug that needs to be bitten. No, that's not the expression. A bug doesn't get bitten. The bug does the biting, but you just
got the bug again.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. But, you know, this is our job. This is all gastrogaze stuff and a bit of other stuff on the side is our job. And it's kind of like, in exploring it, I'm discovering that I want to go back to the thing I did, but I have to do that here, not in London. It's all quite confusing, and it's a mess. But, you know, who knows? I could end up being back on radio one day. Probably not.
Plug.
I'll send you my CV. So, before I start crying on air, thanks, Patrick Hanlon.
Yes.
Welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you, Kirsty Young.
My castaway this week is Patrick Hanlon. I can't do it.
Maybe don't do your Sheila Dillon either.
No. Okay. Sheila Dillon, for those of you who don't know her, and you should know her, she's fantastic, presents the food program on Radio 4, and she has the most listenable accent along with Kirsty Young. And I kind of always do a little imitation of it before we go on air whenever we're recording anything for the podcast. As a result, it's now like, okay, do a Sheila. I'm not doing it now. No. So I think it's actually quite bad.
Maybe the last episode of season 2.
Focus on you. Let's focus on you. Shut up, Russell. Let's talk about you, Patrick. I was forgetting your name there for a second.
8 long years. Wow. And it's at this point that you forget my name.
So you kept talking about my skill set.
Hmm.
Who are you?
Who am I? I guess in the whole sphere of gastrogaze, I'm more of the written word element.
So it's your fault why people say to us, oh my god, I read your blog post, it was really well written. Shock.
Including a surprising inflection at the end. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Which every time we hear that, we're like, yes, we know.
Nah, we are humble.
Our heads.
Yeah. No, you are a very good writer.
I'm a trained journalist. So, you know, it's kind of like you with the podcast, it's the area of expertise that I come from, and it's the job I always wanted from when I was a teenager, and I don't think it's ever waned, because I just felt that I was able to communicate really, really well through word and the syntax and how everything flows and creating these beautiful imagery through words. So yeah, I'm really, really precious about our blog and the whole kind of conversation about bloggers, and they're quite often blaggers and they haven't got the chops and they haven't got the experience, or they can't string a sentence together. As we hear the criticism of all of the time, I'm really precious, and I'm really, I have strong feelings about that, because I think when I was training to be a journalist from about 2008-09 to 2011, it was the time of the global crash, and there was no jobs, and there was a real fear about anyone training to be a journalist trying to go out there into the world. So at that time, we were all encouraged to blog. Here's this free online tool to spread your skills. And at that time, all of us were like really, really enthused and thought, oh yeah, a great way to showcase our writing, a great opportunity for an online portfolio, and it would help me to hone skills. And then fast forward a few years later where everyone seems to have a blog and there's ample criticism absolutely everywhere.
Some completely unwarranted.
Yeah.
And some deserving, and some, yeah, occasionally.
I mean, of course, once blogging became really popular and kind of everyone had a go, that's when you see the kind of quality fade or kind of the quality of the writing takes a back. Then you kind of see the quality of the writing takes a back seat and it's more about the imagery or other things. And I think that happens in any industry when it completely opens up. So even though in this day and age, it's all about Instagrammers and podcasts and all of that kind of thing, I'm still really in love with our blog, and it will always be the homepage of everything that we do. Mm. And I think over the years, that's been the kind of consistent job that I have done more or less of on our brand. I think as the time has gone on, we've kind of interchanged our skills in the imagery or the editing of stuff or recipes or events and stuff. But I pretty much do all of the writing and you pretty much do all of the podcast still.
And other things. I do other things, I promise. Yeah, it's crazy. And actually, the podcast coincided with another thing that we started doing on our blog that I just let you go with. Yeah. And I let you be. So every week on gastrogaze.com, we do a feature every Monday called Today's Chip Paper, which is the weekend reviews in review. Now, I'm a pain to explain the expression, but you know the... I'll explain where the name came from. Basically, everyone says, oh, today's newspaper is tomorrow's chip paper.
No.
Right?
Today's news is tomorrow's chip paper.
Sure, that one works too. Great. And we were like, oh, so if it's Monday, then it's today's chip paper. Let's talk about that. And do you want to talk a little bit more about doing it? Because I think we've talked a lot about the podcast, but this is something that you love to do. Mm-hmm. And I get a couple of hours away from you on Sunday, which is beautiful, bliss, to be honest. Right? And I'm sure vice versa. But it just means that you get your little space, and this is something you are like, I'm doing this every week, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of work. So basically, the premise of it is that we pour over the papers. We pour over the papers every single weekend, and we love all of the inserts and the magazines, and we generally tend to focus more on the lifestyle-y colour stuff rather than the news, and definitely not the sports.
I call myself a newspaper editor when, yeah, they come in, don't I? So I pick up the Irish Times or whatever and I go, I'm a newspaper editor, watch sports.
Edited. And that's pretty much what happens every single weekend in our house. But basically, it's kind of a overview, a surmising of what the critics are saying and where all of them are eating. So we kind of do maybe 5 to 10 critics from the UK, Ireland, Northern Ireland, every single week, and we kind of give an overview of the places they're eating and what they're saying about it, and then kind of interject our own experiences of the places if it applies. And I really, really enjoyed doing it, and it's been kind of concurrent to the podcast because the two kind of started at the same time, and the two of them are a weekly thing and they're kind of in tandem a bit. And yeah, it was kind of inspired by London. There's a couple of sites or blogs that are kind of the same. They kind of have the same slant or the same angle. And I thought that there's nothing quite like this in Ireland over the past few years. And I think this could definitely be applied to Ireland, because if you're into food and you're into the food critics, I think it's easy to miss them, or it's easy to gloss over a review that's quite funny or that's quite entertaining or quite harsh as well. So I think it's kind of just a home for all of the critic reviews. I think I've explained that in the worst way possible, but basically click onto it and read it if you're interested in that kind of thing, and you will see the kind of style and the structure that we're going for.
Now, there's something about the way it's done each week. It's not just, I suppose, like a couple of them that we read in London. Like, I'm obsessed with Eater London and George Reynolds, who used to tweet a lot and was so sassy on Twitter. I just adored him, but he kind of took a break from it for a while, probably because I think a lot of people were getting a bit annoyed at him, and it was unnecessary, the amount of kind of criticism he was getting for being a little bit off-piste with views about food and the internet and everything like that. But he continues to write for Eater, and he does a thing called Insta Stories every week.
Love it.
And oh my god, it is the most revealing, exciting thing to read, if I'm completely honest, every week. One thing that we despised about London was the Insta elite. And there's some absolutely darling, lovely people within that sphere, and they're amazing, and they're so talented at what they do, and everything like that. But 90% of them can't be bothered to declare that they have been invited somewhere, which is a huge issue, especially when they hold a huge amount of influence online. Oh, and if they do, they sometimes put the invite in between 150 other hashtags and everything like that. Anyway, I'm going to go on a rant here, so I'm sorry.
I hope you're comfortable.
But he kind of taken that and all the other elements of the BS that goes on with what a lot of these guys do, and has brought a lot of it to the forefront. Some of it completely correct and some of it really wrong. I think he's gone too far sometimes as well. But I love the fact that he calls out. He's like, so how many chairs are you standing on to get this bloody shot? Or my favourite one is, you know, must go to event of the week that no one declared type of thing. So it's like, oh, everyone went to this particular restaurant and all had the same dish. What a surprise. Everyone thinks the same. You know, that is, we always said in London, we were like, I don't want to be going to the things that everyone else is doing. And it's actually quite interesting because, you know, I have my emails open here as I'm recording and I'm constantly having a little peek at it.
Stop. Focus.
I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. But we get asked so many things quite often. And it's a huge privilege of the job. It's a great thing to be able to do. But we actually say no to so, so much. Because I've always said, and this is a little blogging tip for people. Oh God, I've gone full Tony Blackburn there. Okay. I'm sorry. A little blogging tip for you there. That whenever you're going on to, say, Instagram, or back in the day, Snapchat.
Oh, God. Or IP, long gone,
to
bye.
Where you used to be. when you would go on that, think of it like the skybox inside. You know, you're going through it, and us during the World Cup or something like that. It's like, World Cup, World Cup, World Cup. Oh, God, when will it end? Could you imagine being a non-blogger or just an audience member, as many of you are, listening or watching the same stories of the same places from the same people? It's boring. It's giving people nothing new and nothing exciting. So, you know, I'm sure there's some people out there who go, oh, those guys never go to anything. Or I'm certain someone has at least said they think they're too good for it. One, we live 100 million miles away, or at least it feels like it, from Dublin. So it's not ideal. Two, you're the designated driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the designated trainer. So it's not as much fun for you. And if we get to train up, it costs a lot of money. And three, a lot of events are very uncomfortable.
It's quite orchestrated.
Mm.
I mean, everybody thinks that it's this glossy experience, but it's usually quite formulaic. It's quite structured. You have to play ball. You kind of are in a corner and you're expected to perform.
Mm.
And over the years, we've just become a little tired of that, and it's pretty samey. And a tip that we always give when we're asked about bloggers or Instagrammers is curate your content. Try to be a point of difference to everyone else, because quite often the opportunities are the same ones handed to everyone. Mm. So if you can interpret that in a unique way or add your own slant onto it, that is magic.
Mm. And I agree completely. And it's all about finding your own uniqueness. And frankly, even though we do go to some things and love them, some events, some gatherings are fantastic fun to go to. And, you know, some agencies who are incredible at what they do and put on the best shows. But sometimes it's just standing around the room talking to each other. And I'm like, I have so much to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have a list beside us of things that we need to do after recording this podcast. And it's not funny. My life just feels like a constant list.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a sacrifice of time. And, you know, at the end of the day, we always say about content. And going back to the original thing of, you know, today's chip paper and reviews and everything. It's so important to always give something different. We get so annoyed when we go, oh, they're reviewing there. Of course they're reviewing there. That's going to happen. Or, you know, he's gone to this place. Well, I saw that he went to that place a couple of weeks ago. So it's no surprise. I love getting a surprise. I love getting that, you know, oh, this is interesting. This is different. And I'm sure a lot of other people like that too. And that's what we like to do. And, you know, I say there's plenty of criticism, I'm sure, about what we do and how we do everything, and that's absolutely fine. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone also has mouths and other bits. But I think we always have tried to be different.
Yeah, and I think the unique thing about it is that it gives context.
Yeah.
So that you can go, so it kind of compiles all of the critics over time that you can kind of throw in, oh, well, actually, three of these four have reviewed this one place in the past few weeks. Whereas if you're an everyday reader just flicking through them every weekend, you might not think that way, or you might not go, oh, well, X plus Y equals Z.
Mm.
And it's just that kind of thread of like adding in some unique information or a slant or a twist that I think brings it alive.
Mm. And ultimately, we do it just for a general audience. It's not, I guess, like a couple of the ones that you used to read in London in particular were very industry-led.
Entirely.
You know, it wasn't designed for the general public. They were industry because you worked in PR for some time. So you know exactly what you're trying to glean from all this.
And if you're after any for inspiration or any others, I highly recommend The Code, which is a hospitality newsletter, which is published through email, actually, every Monday. And from my days in PR, maybe 3 years ago, that was a Bible because it tells you all of the new openings or the closures, who's hired where, and other kind of personal experiences of the whole hospitality industry in London.
Because, you know, ultimately, there is things for industry and then there's things for the general public. And we ultimately always say it's everything has to be for the audience. Without an audience, you're nothing. Without an audience, you're pointless. And what's the point in doing anything if your audience aren't interested in what you're doing and engaging with it and reading it and everything? And that's exactly what we endeavour to do. And hopefully we do it well. Mm. It's as simple as that. So I've been taking note here as we've recorded this of different timestamps along the way of places where you stopped and began. And I'm sure people are like, why has that happened throughout? And we've talked about this before. Now, we don't often bring it up on the blog or anything like that because in some ways it's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And actually, in a lot of ways, it's irrelevant. But the thing that I'm most proud of with this podcast isn't the subscriptions, the response or anything. It's the fact that I've managed to get you, Patrick Hanlon,
yes,
on a microphone speaking.
I think to come back to the original point of the question that I asked you at the start, which is you were made for radio. It's the place that you feel the most comfortable. It was always your dream. To me, that is the complete opposite. I It is not my comfort zone at all. Anything that's about broadcasting or speech has always been a real issue for me because I have a stammer. And putting yourself out there on screen, on film, on audio, on anything like that is a huge challenge because you're having to face the one thing throughout your entire life that has hindered you and stopped you at every turn. So it's something that I've had for my entire life. I don't remember a time when I didn't have it. And when I was in school and in university, it got progressively worse. Whereas sometimes people with a stammer that develops in childhood, there's this phrase that's thrown around that you grow out of it. But that did not happen for me at all. It actually got worse and worse and worse as I grew up and grew into myself. So I had different rounds of speech therapy through childhood, through adolescence. And they were kind of a quick fix at the time, but they didn't really have the long-lasting results. So then when I was in university in DCU where we met, it got really, really bad because I was anxious about going to a new school firstly. So I thought, okay, my speech in secondary school wasn't the best, but I have this fresh start now in this new place on a big campus with lots of new people. It wasn't the fresh start that I wanted because it got worse. But then when I was going through the motions in university, I was kind of in this comfortable space in this pretty small class of about 20 or 30 of us. So then I kind of found a comfort zone there. But then when the anxiety and the pressure of, okay, I'm going to be graduating soon, I'm going to have to go out into the world and have a proper job and prove myself, that got way too much and my speech just took a nosedive. And it was about the time that we met as well. And
oh God, yeah.
I'm what's known as a covert stammer. So to explain that, there's kind of two areas of it. There's covert and overt. And they're kind of the opposite of each other, but it is a spectrum. So there isn't anyone who's 100% either. But covert basically means that it's kind of undetectable. So if you're a covert stammer, you will use a lot of tricks to appear to be fluent. And you will avoid a lot of words and avoid a lot of situations. You will use tricks like blinking or slapping your leg or trying to make yourself speak in a particular way. On the opposite end of that, overt is, oh, you know they have a stammer because it's all over their face. They aren't able to, you know, string a few words together and they really struggle every time they try to speak. So I would always be covert and around the time that we met, and also for quite a few of the people in my university, even in my class, they would think, he has a stammer? Mm. What? I
just thought you were quiet and shy. And me being alone
so
now,
endearing.
I was like, this is great. I can just talk to him all the time.
Yeah.
But I remember there was something, because obviously when you're getting to know each other and everything, you told me that your sister did fashion. Which is interesting.
Mm.
She studied fashion, wasn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lie.
No, true.
No, then what was it? It was...
But transferred to a different course that... But for me, it was easier to say fashion...
That's right.
...than graphics.
Yeah.
So there is a point that for a stammerer, it can turn towards lies.
Mm.
Because it's easier to say the wrong thing
mm.
than to say the thing that you actually have to say. And that, I mean, apart from the telling of a lie or stretching a truth, internally, knowing that you're having to lie or having to use a completely wrong word kills you. But it's the only way you can come across as fluent and cohesive.
And another letter you had an issue with is the letter R.
Yeah.
And my name is Russell.
Yeah.
But not many probably know, I have two first names. So I've Russell and James, and a lot of my family throughout school, I was called James. And I basically, I think I found my birth cert or something like that at some point. And I was like, oh, my name's Russell, I'm going by Russell now. And I basically have every document at this point almost saying Russell, and everyone calls me Russell. And if you say, what's your name? I say Russell. And when we met and you found this out, you were like, I like James.
Well, I do. I do. I do like the name James, and it's not because
it's saying it's weird.
It's easier to say. But I mean, for me, that's easier to say, but for others, it could be incredibly hard. I mean, there isn't one rule and there isn't one kind of experience of this. It affects everybody individually. There's no cure. So I will never be cured of this. But there's ways to cope. And when I was in university, I found a way to cope. So I joined a program called the Maguire Program, which is a worldwide program, which has been in Ireland for over 20 years. And in Ireland and the UK especially, it came to huge prominence with Gareth Gates, who came through the program after pop stars, and it transformed him, especially in front of the public eye. They kind of saw this person who was quite clearly an overt Saddamer, who kind of headed off into obscurity, retrained how to speak, and then came back and blew everybody away because he was confident and he was speaking exactly how he wanted to and expressing himself. And so that, to pretty much everyone who comes across the program, is the thing that they go, wow, it's transformative. Now, to get to that point, it takes a lot of hard work. Yeah. And
you're a testament to that hard work.
It is. I describe it like a mixture between rehab and a boot camp. And that is not an official line from the program itself, and I'm sure they would not be happy that I explain it that way on a broadcast like this. But that is how I explain it to other people, because it's the closest thing I can get to describing the work it takes, and it is intensive. You have to break yourself down and relearn how to breathe, firstly, with no sounds, then adding in sounds, you know, A, E, and then adding those into words, and then slowly growing your speech again from the complete start using a completely different technique. So it's been a long, long road of work and attending courses and practice, and that was in 2011. So I've been on the program now for 7 years, and it's been the best thing I've ever done, because it allowed me to do these kind of things where, in the public eye, and just by the nature of the job that we do, I have to speak, I have to present, I have to interview, I have to be on camera, I have to be on radio. And these are all things that terrified me because of my speech. It isn't that I'm terrified of a radio interview or being on screen on TV. And this is the crucial bit. It's that I'm terrified of stammering. And that's the thing that, through years on the program, really, and it's a thing that they teach you early on, but really only in the past year or so, it's clicked of like, wow, it's not a fear of speaking. It's not a fear of interaction. It's not being underconfident in your ability. It's about being terrified of stammering and of coming across as a stammerer.
Mm.
It isn't the activity at all.
Mm.
You know, and that's the thing that even now is a thing I have to work on every day, and it trips me up all of the time, and I'm not perfect and I'm not the poster child for it, but at the same time I try to work really, really hard at this to be confident and competent and assured, and to be comfortable with this is how I speak, because we're in an industry where we're always pushed to be the best at. And it's really, really hard to not compare yourself to others, even to compare me to you, because I'm around you all of the time. So it's really, really easy to go, God, I'm really crap because they can speak so elegantly and eloquently and effortlessly, or they can just jump into an interview, or they can just introduce themselves at an event and I can't. And then if you get into that mindset, it will begin to fester, and it will kind of take over after a while. So I try to be confident and assured in, I speak differently, this is how I have to speak, and I have a particular way I need to communicate, and that's okay because everybody is individual and this is just the best way that works for me.
And in terms of some of the techniques to prepare,
because
I understand it so much because I've been around you pretty much every day since you went on this program.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. And you've had to explain to me so often about how it feels and everything like that. And I will never understand it. I've had an experience where I did, but I won't go into that. But...
No, explain
that. Okay, so... Well, your issue is... I don't want to say issue, but you know what I mean. Is
issue?
Issue is about your speech. I, for some reason, have a facial tic that I have had for God knows how many years. I think since going back to the BBC, the time I remember having it is I walked into a glass window in the reception of the broadcasting house, and the next thing I knew, a few days later, I was twitching my forehead and raising my eyebrows type of thing. And... that sounds like I'm going to sue the BBC. I'm not, just FYI. But it was because I was on my phone. Typical millennium. And as for about, what, 3, 4, 5 years after that, possibly, probably about 3 years, I was having this constant facial twitch where I'm like raising my eyebrows, twitching my forehead, and I feel it every time. I know I'm doing it. I can stop it, but you know when you say stop doing that? I just did it.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I used to style my hair up. So if you see really old photos of me, I always have my hair up. I don't have a fringe, except for my emo days as a teenager. And I basically, it was getting too much. I was a tour guide at the BBC. We were starting to do things on a TV channel that's now called Virgin Media One, but that's not how I know it. And... all these little things, and I was getting more and more self-conscious, and I started having people joking at me, going, oh, why are you raising your eyebrows at me? And I'm just like, oh God, shut up. Or, you know, a couple of people would mock me in work or something like that, and thinking they're joking and all this type of stuff. And I was like, this is destroying, I can't do anything about it. And then my parents basically mentioned it to me very, very gently and everything, going, what is this type of thing? And I've kind of always had a few little twitches over the years. I don't know how. Is it habitual? Is it a form of OCD? I don't know, but I've always had it. I do a thing with my neck every so often, almost like trying to do a Deirdre Barlow impression can type of thing. I sometimes twitch my nose, which now I blame on my nose piercing and all this type of stuff, but I actually just have quite an itchy nose anyway, and my forehead. And about two years ago, I went to hypnotherapy to try and figure this crap out, because it was doing literally my head in. And I went to one nearby work in London, in Southwark, and she was fantastic. And I did three sessions. And the first one, I was kind of semi-conscious with it, I don't know. And I kind of knew what I was saying and everything like that. The second or third time, I went quite deep, let's just say. And I was asked to talk about some things and or whatever. And I couldn't speak whatsoever. And I felt a feeling where the words are there, but they can't come out. And that. And I was like, I'm stammering. And I could, I just in that moment, while under, let's say, I was like, oh my God, I'm stammering. This is how it feels. And when it was like 3, 2, 1, you're back in the room type of thing, I burst into tears, because I had never, ever, ever, ever in my life understood. I always get like this when I tell the story, because it meant a lot to me and for us in our relationship. That I never, ever, ever understood how it feels until that moment. Mm. And I called you crying, bawling my eyes out in Bermondsey. And you were in work and you were like, what's up, what's up, what's up? I was like, I stammered.
I was like, okay.
And I was like, how's that?
Explain more.
And the irony is, I was gone from stammering to being a blubbering fool who can't shut up in the space of about 20 minutes. Mm. And I was like, type of thing. And I was like, yeah, I'll tell you all later. But when I was under, in my hypnotic state or whatever, I stammered. And I finally understood what you go through every single day. And it's hard. It was 10 minutes where I was supposed to be talking and I couldn't talk. And it was awful. Yeah. I hated it. And I understood it. And from that day on, even though I always appreciated and was so proud of you, I think it went 10-fold, 100-fold after that, because I got it.
Yeah.
I just understood it. And I think, you know, I think even the simplest things, like talking to me, I know there's times when I go, he doesn't want to talk to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I give you space sometimes. And then
Not all the time.
And then there's other times when I know, say an opportunity comes up, like we do. Radio quite often. We're really lucky that we get to go on like 2FM quite a lot on Nikki and Jenny's show, and we love doing that. But you have to prepare for it, you know. Mm. Like, are you wearing it now?
Yeah.
You're wearing it? You're wearing your bra, as you call it. So you have a speech belt, it's Velcro though, isn't it really?
It's Velcro, yeah. But the premise of it is that it constricts your breathing.
Mm.
Because at the basis, yes, as you can hear.
It's radio.
So it's around my chest. And basically the premise of the whole program and the technique that I've been taught and that I use is all about breathing. But it's about breathing from a different part of the diaphragm. So it's the part that's used by opera singers and athletes. That's called the costal diaphragm.
Disclosure, you're neither. Right?
What?
You're neither an opera singer or an athlete.
Oh, no, oh, sadly. Okay. I'm neither. I'm
Patrick
just
Pavarotti.
An old schmo. But most people, when they speak from the crural area. So that's why you have to train this completely different area of your lungs and your diaphragm that only kind of comes into play when you're an opera singer or an athlete and kind of at top end of your abilities. And so you have to train yourself to use that, and for that to become automatic, and for that to be your everyday breathing and speaking. So that's a thing that you have to do every single day, is you have to practice breathing. And it sounds so easy, but it's the easiest thing to not do, and it's the easiest thing to forget or to gloss over, but it really is the foundation of everything. And the belt isn't an essential, but to me it really, really helps in reminding me you need to breathe this way, you need to, it has to constrict you in the right way, because this is the way I communicate best. And other things, just like, there's a technique I have that the more I use it and the more I exaggerate it, the more you become comfortable using and exaggerating it around others and around people that you haven't ever met, or around people that you're really, really close to. So it's all about practice and challenging yourself and exaggerating and honing in. So it's a lot of work on an everyday basis. And yeah, it's completely transformed my quality of life. Yeah. I mean, absolutely transformed. And it's weird, because before joining the McGuire program, everything we do in our job now would have stopped me in my tracks and absolutely terrified me, and I'd have such anxiety and pressure over it. But now those are the everyday things, and those are the things I have to embrace, and that I have to do. But because of these techniques and this, and the support of everyone else on this program who are enduring the same thing or have the same ish experiences, is just transformative. And I now approach everything with an attitude that I can do it, and I can embrace it, and I really can take on a challenge and actually enjoy it.
Good. That really felt like one of those moments in Drag Race where it's like, talk to little Patrick. what would you say to him right now?
I thought you were going to say, now sashay away.
You could do that too.
I was like, okay.
And stop.
That's cute, but you're eliminated now.
That's cute, but there's a time limit on the podcast. No. It is amazing. And even the fact that, you know, right now, framing my four eyes that I have is you in front of a microphone speaking. I can't shut you up sometimes.
I tell everybody this. If you ever speak to a person who has a stammer, you need to know that they are the most confident, loud, funny, talkative, incredibly talented, knowledgeable people you will ever meet. Mm. And they're not underconfident and they're not shy. The only problem is that they can't communicate in the way they want to. Mm. And there's this one thing that's holding them back from being the person that they want to be. And that is a stammer. So when you find the techniques that work for you, you can't shut them up.
No. And Jesus, here's a secret about these podcasts as well. That every week, when you hear the theme tune and everything, you'll hear us talking and introducing that week's guest, because we go out and we record with all the guests who have been fantastic for the past 11 episodes. This episode not so much, but anyway. But we'd always record the intro just before mixing it down and everything like that. And you get yours perfect every single time, and the one who messes it up is me.
Yeah, but I'm a perfectionist, especially over speech.
Yeah.
And like, I'd agonize over speech in a way that you'd think, oh, anyway, I'll just do that again. It's absolutely ingrained in me to like, no, this has to be perfect and I have to do this right.
But you are perfect. Oh, you. So, wow, that went deep, sorry. But I think it's nice to know. I think it's something that we kind of never get a chance to discuss because people are shy and people get worried and people go, you know, eyes start moving shiftily whenever you start stammering and don't ask about it. Whereas you and I kind of go, they have a stammer. Let's talk to them about it type of thing, you know, because we're used to that kind of thing. And yeah, it's something that we actually kind of didn't plan on talking about, but it just came up because I think it's relevant. You know, this is a podcast, this is speech, this is something that you are listening to. And we hope by now, at the end of this, you know, you learn a little bit more about us as people.
And the kind of integral things that fuel us, our interests, our skills, and who we really are.
And yeah, I think that's a really nice summarizing of everything, isn't it?
So thank you for tuning in to this entire season of Chew the Fat. We really, really appreciate all of the support and the interaction and the downloads and the shares. And we couldn't be more proud of these 12 episodes. But There's lots more to come.
So we are taking a couple of weeks break from the podcast, mostly for our sanity and just to kind of get some things recorded, because it's a crazy time of year, as you know, September, November, up to December. I forgot October as well, but it's all quite a crazy time of year. So we're wanting to just bank a few things away, think about how the podcast goes, get some feedback from you guys, and just make series two a good one too. And we're excited for it. It should be a good one. So from the two of us, thank you for listening.
Until next time.
Bye.